Even before Donald Trump entered America's highest office, an international survey revealed that narcissism is part of the assumed national character of Americans. Only a small number actually meet the criteria for narcissistic personality disorder. Those exploit a few have a way of gaining center stage in our culture. The new book, Fragile Bully, Understanding Our Destructive Affair with Narcissism in the Age of Trump, looks at the real problem of narcissism. In it, we see past the solo act to the vicious circles that arise in relationships with a fragile bully and how patterns like this generate both power and self-destruction. Dr. Lori Helgo is an author, educator, and clinical psychologist with a special interest in the interactions between personality and culture. She's an associate professor of behavioral sciences at the Ross University School of Medicine, and we welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Lori, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Joe. Thank you.
Very nice to have you on the program. Normally, at this time, I ask the question of what led you to write the book. I think in this case, I know.
You probably do.
But what is it about this time? Obviously, you as someone who has been a clinical psychologist and an educator for a long time have thought about narcissism. So it also gives you an opportunity to write about this subject at large.
Yes, it really does. And I think, that can be the silver lining here is that narcissism is more and more in our face. And so we are not only contending it, with ways we've always contended with it, with relationships, with people who are maybe higher on that scale, even dealing with our own narcissism, but we are seeing it at a socio-political scale like we've never seen before in the way that people are engaging from the public arenas to social media. And so the challenge is there for us. It's really hard to avoid contending with it.
So what is it about narcissism that allowed us to begin this affair with it, if you will? And a destructive one, as you point out.
There's something very alluring and actually entertaining about narcissism. For one thing, if somebody's out there making provocative statements, that's newsworthy. It arouses emotions. There's even literature that shows brain centers, get aroused, and the rewards when we feel anger and a need to retaliate, and then we see, the villain punished. That's the whole formula behind reality TV. So there is something rather intoxicating about it, whether we're on the side of being, rallying behind it or on the side of retaliating against it, there's a pull. We perk up. We are interested. We pay attention.
So as you point out in the book, it's something you call the fragile bully dynamic. So what is that? It's this about this thing that we find so repellent, the characteristics, and yet we're drawn to it.
So one of the dynamics is that the fragile bully provokes, belittles, gets us roused up, okay? Then a pretty natural response is to retaliate with more of the same. When we think of the word react, we react sometimes the very thing we oppose. But then we give fuel to the fragile bully, to the fragility, so that bully feels victimized, hurt, you're being bad, brings the focus back on himself, and justifies more aggression. So even in retaliating, we can play into that. There are a number of different types of destructive dances I talk about, but that one I think is front and center.
You make this point in the book in talking about the narcissistic traits or tendencies that you see in the president. You do not look to evaluate him or to diagnose him because you believe that's part of the problem.
Yes, it's quite a paradox because I think we have become far too focused on the personality of Donald Trump, and in our reactions to that personality, we start to both, evidence some of the very behaviors we ascribe to him. The problem is that narcissism breeds, it all ends up focusing on, you know, our positions in relation to Trump, as opposed to our positions independent, you know, of him. So I think that is part of the tricky territory we're in right now.
Let us talk for a moment about the difference between narcissism and ego.
This is a good opportunity for me to explain. I think that we often think of narcissism as a bad thing, when actually it's a human thing. We all have some level of narcissism, and at its base, it simply refers to self-interest. Somebody lacking, completely lacking in narcissism, would have problems as well as somebody who's has an excessive level. Ego is often a misused term, or it's a confusing term, but the way that we're talking about it, as somebody who's full of themselves, they care about how they're viewed, that corresponds more to what we call grandiose narcissism, when it's extreme, when the concern about one's ego, concern about one's image, how one is perceived, is all important, then that does look very much like grandiose narcissism. There's another kind of narcissism we often neglect to talk about, which is vulnerable narcissism. And that is when the self is so fragile that any hint of criticism might threaten its destruction. And with the fragile bully, we have those two things in play together.
Is grandiose narcissism the same as another phrase that I've heard used, which is toxic narcissism?
Yes, well, right. So grandiose at its extreme, I think what people talk about, I mean, that's not a diagnostic term, but I think it talks about what it feels like. There's kind of a sense of being poisoned or slimed by the presence of this person. And personality disorders in general are felt more by the people around the person with the disorder, whereas depression or anxiety are felt by the person suffering, and they often seek help. The challenge of narcissism is that the ones feeling sick are the ones often in proximity to that person.
You have a section in here about the dances of narcissism and talk about common vicious circles that feed narcissism. How do we avoid that?
Oh, right, right. So, yes, there are a number of dances I talk about, some that place the person above the narcissist. I'm going to fix you, I'm going to help you, or I'm going to analyze you, you know, or aren't you cute, how, you know, how silly you are, and belittles the narcissist. There's dances in which you put yourself below, you know, where you allow yourself to be made invisible, kind of like in the myth of Narcissus and Echo. Echo becomes only voice. There's the provoke and react, which is the one I spoke of, where we retaliate with the same kind of belittling quality. So it isn't easy, because we can move from one dance and we find ourselves in the other one. But I think the bottom line is that we all of these cycles have some characteristic of mutual dehumanization. We stop seeing a human, and we also stop acting like a human. And humans aren't just kind and loving. Humans also are angry, and humans have needs. And so one of the kind of formulas for communicating with, for example, a loved one who has a narcissistic impairment is to acknowledge the importance of that person to you while also acknowledging what you need, bringing yourself into the room and prompting that person to also express, feel some empathy toward you. And at the middle range of the continuum, narcissistic people are capable of that. But it's not easy, and that's why I wrote a book about it.
Because this book is really how we deal with a narcissist, right? I mean, you're looking for us of how to cope.
Yes, and how to deal with it and in its various manifestations, and also even within ourselves, because we wouldn't be likely react so strongly if we didn't have our own sensitivities and defenses that get activated. Yes, it's a complex web, and I love complex webs, so I dug right in.
So, I mean, back to the president for a second. So, when you have
yes.
to be, just because it's a good example. So,
sure.
I mean, we're dealing with that on a national level, but we're not dealing with it on a day to day level where we have to spend time in a room with a guy. But so that's different when you do have to spend your time in a room with a person who's like that.
Yes.
How is that managing it different?
It's how to manage the more up close and personal version.
Correct.
Right, right. And I think when you're up close and personal, you also get a little bit more to work with. And I can't speak to those relationships with the president, but I can say that up close and personal, you also might be more tempted to respond to fragility. I have had a lot of experience with up close and personal narcissism, and I think when you care about somebody, it can have a different kind of you can have a different kind of challenge there. And I think that's where pulling the focus a little bit away from that fragile bully and noticing what's going on with you. Echo starved and became hardened into stone and was only a voice that could repeat Narcissus's words. We sometimes forget when we're in the presence of somebody who's so needy and so controlling that we forget of ourselves. And sometimes the real cure is to stop looking at, even stop empathizing to some degree. And I say that lightly, but I what I mean by that is to the extent that empathy means that you have to compromise your attention to what you need, there's a problem with it.
In doing that, don't you become more the target of the narcissist, though?
You can, right, right. And that really goes to how invested is that narcissist in your relationship, and how, you know, is that person willing to suffer a little what we call a narcissistic injury, you know, to see you and to respond to you? Is that person capable of some empathy when you are approaching that person, you know, in a way that is relational and connected? Those are tough questions. Sometimes you only know by trying and then finding that at every turn that person needs to pull it back onto themselves, needs to banish you from the equation, and that's a relationship that isn't sustainable. It's not a relationship.
And what if the opposite is true? I mean, you're talking about the narcissist making the decision that they don't want to have you part of the equation, but at some point the person who is coping with the narcissist may also feel that they can no longer be a part of the equation.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is sometimes I think often of the movie War Games, in which, you know, it's the war game, the computer game is thermonuclear war.
Right.
And, you know, the only way to win is not to play was the outcome. And sometimes that is the conclusion. The only way to win is not to play.
When you think of this book and the idea of a fragile bully, I just want to get to this idea because I'm not sure we fully explored it, which is the fragility of the bully, because we don't think of our bullies often as being fragile.
Yeah, so I talk about the fragile bully matrix, and there is a spectrum that researchers have looked at between, you know, vulnerable end of the continuum, where somebody might be quite shy and just, you know, avoiding any kind of criticism. They might also be very needy and kind of, you know, gain attention through that, to, you know, the very grandiose extreme, in which that person may be pretty oblivious and not, you don't see much fragility. But there is some evidence that when those two qualities meet, they meet in a more severe cases in which the sense of self is so deficient that the person really needs to uphold and continually construct and reconstruct this grandiose self and to employ people who support that. And so the bullying comes out of that need, that fragility, and we sense that, but sometimes we can't label it. we sense that we are, you know, we need to kind of help hold this person together. We might be embarrassed for them, or we willingly become enlisted into kind of defending the person who's bullying us, which is a horrible paradox to be in.
Does it fit the profile, again, going just to the president for a moment, but does it fit the profile that here is someone that uses Twitter to often bully as opposed to bullying the person to their face? And we even see this in personal relationships where the narcissist may be less apt to talk to a person directly, but through other channels.
Yes, and I think this is where we really see the fragile bully component, you know, kind of coming from the president. It's and what I see is what everybody else sees, and it's also what gets featured, and it's what we pay attention to. But it is this kind of mix of grandiose, those kind of provocations, kind of belittling and bullying from the Twitter verse, and then also this kind of retaliation to even, you know, a comedy show, for example, that there's this hurt and this need to somehow defend oneself against something that might otherwise be considered rather benign.
This will be my final question, but it's a big one, which is, and we touched on it, but of breaking free from a destructive relationship, of what steps a person in a relationship with a narcissist should take to one, break free, and then two, to recover from the damage that has been done.
So yes, when you've determined, yes, you are, you know, this is a toxic, destructive relationship, and you need to step out. I think the biggest challenge, and I talk about, is first kind of preparing yourself. There's stages of change we go through of, you know, how are you going to deal with some of the backlash? How are you going to, you know, how are you going to get through this? Also, learning to disengage, learning to be aware of your own temptation to engage, and where are the hooks? What are you tempted to do? Are you tempted to retaliate? You just got to get in that last word. Are you tempted to be pulled back into caregiver? You may need a lot of support to resist those temptations. And then I think that you need to have a lot of compassion for yourself. People, unfortunately, those who are stuck in a relationship with an extreme narcissist, you know, have heard maybe 100 times, why don't you just leave? Well, it's more complicated than that. I talked with one woman who said, you know, I put so much good energy into this relationship, and I made a lot of headway, you know, and it's hard to let go with nothing to show for it. And so there is grief. There's grief of what could have been, you know, the grief of the wish to heal this person, perhaps. And so I think a lot of self-compassion and room for those emotions is important, and a huge amount of support to get yourself through it.
The name of the book is Fragile Bully: Understanding Our Destructive Affair with Narcissism in the Age of Trump. Lori Helgo is a clinical psychologist, educator, and author, and is an associate professor of behavioral sciences at the Ross University School of Medicine. Dr. Helgo, I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Joe. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Fragile Bully: Understanding Our Destructive Affair with Narcissism in the Age of Trump. The book is published by Diversion Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.